This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:05 in the evening, and our first story is about eggs.
Oh, I frequently think every now and then of the glorious fruit of the noble hen. Eggs! Eggs! E-double-G-S eggs!
Precisely. Thank you, Song. So in just 1 week, the price of our glorious eggs have spiked up by almost 30%. And it seems that egg cartels are to blame. We've talked about this briefly in Market Wrap previously. This, of course, has prompted the government to roll out investigations. Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Saifuddin Nasution Ismail said that the ministry is looking across the supply chain to determine whether collusion or cartels artificially boosted prices.
Now, according to the ministry, the cost of a crate of 10 eggs in Putrajaya climbed as high as 5 ringgit 11 cent at the start of December from 3 ringgit 98 cent a week earlier. Average prices in Malaysia are currently about 4 ringgit for 10. Saifuddin Nasution says that if egg prices continue to rise, it will adversely affect Malaysians.
Ianya menjadi sensitif kerana telur adalah sumber protein yang murah. Kalau sumber protein yang murah ini pun menjadi mahal, sudah tentu rungutan rakyat itu agak tinggi dan kuat kedengaran. Dan yang ini kalau kita dapati ada perlakuan itu, maka Akta Persaingan 2010 membolehkan kita mengambil tindakan.
Our eggs are also exported to countries like Singapore, Hong Kong, the Maldives and Mauritius. And he says that if egg prices continue to increase or remain high, the ministry might examine whether it's necessary to continue exporting eggs at the current volume.
So Malaysia's egg supply fell about 3% in December after a few farms in the north of the country were investigated for avian flu, according to the Veterinary Services Department. But laboratory tests later revealed that those farms were free from the bird flu virus. A weaker currency has also made imported feed more expensive, according to the department.
So this supply drop was likely caused by small farmers closing after being unable to cope with those low prices coupled with the cost of chicken feed. And that's according to Jeffrey Ng, the president of the Federation of Livestock Farmers Associations of Malaysia. Farmers have been selling below output costs for the past 2 years.
The ministry will roll out controls to cap the price of eggs for 5 days during the Christmas holiday to protect consumers at a time of high demand, Saifuddin said. A ceiling price will be set after discussions between producers, the ministry and Department of Veterinary Services.
Eggs, I think, are one of those things that are completely underestimated in terms of how often we use them daily. A spike in egg prices truly affects everything. I mean, it's a cheap protein. It's something that's widely available. It's something that's served often. It's also in a lot of foods. So I think that it's worth investigating whether or not there has been collusion, simply because it's a deceptively simple thing, but it's a huge industry.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, when we spoke about this previously on another matter on why food prices just seem to be so high, it's because I think when we spoke to the Consumers Association of Penang, they says there are these kind of farmer food cartels that exist within the supply chain that work together to hike up prices. I wonder if this is just one small aspect of it, but not, well, relatively small.
Well, that seems to be the angle that the ministry is taking with the investigation as well. So we'll wait and see. I just wanted to talk about egg cartels. But we would also like to ask you, have you noticed a spike in egg prices? Is it something that you consume a lot? Is it something that you've noticed? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Moving on to our next story, though, we are finally hearing from our tourism ministry.
The Tourism, Arts, Culture Deputy Minister Mohammad Bakhtiar Wan Chik has said that Malaysia could be promoted as a wedding destination to boost tourist arrivals.
According to the Deputy Minister, India is one of the countries that we're targeting, considering the large number of tourists from there. He said that we receive about 600,000 visitors from India each year, and they're aiming to increase that figure to 700,000 by 2020.
He also pointed out that Indian nationals seem to focus on their wedding ceremonies, which usually involve elaborate entertainment and food preparation by special chefs. And as for target locations, Muhammad Bakhtiar said that hotels in Langkawi could potentially be promoted as wedding venues.
Wedding tourism is not new. Elsewhere in the world in particular, how many people have we seen going to Paris? And there have been trends in popularity in terms of which destinations are popular choices. Australia is currently a popular spot, apparently, for Chinese tourists to hold weddings. Here are two wedding planners in Australia speaking to SBS TV about this trend.
In recent years, Annie's wedding planning business in Sydney has seen an increase in demand from overseas clients.
Facebook, or like even Instagram, or even WeChat. All these people read that, oh my God, wow, my girlfriend get married in or have a ceremony in Australia, in Sydney. I also want it. Can I make it? Is it too expensive or is it possible?
And all this is good, not just for the happy wedding party, but the Australian tourism sector.
They come here not only come for a reception, a wedding. They are coming often for holiday. Like I would go to David Jones, oh, 3,000 address. It's okay. Doesn't matter because I know I'm going to attend a very important, you know, reception or function. They will sightseeing. They may even go to Gold Coast, Tasmania, Melbourne, anywhere. They really is a group who have potential to spend the money, real money.
It's a great sort of promotion for people who have never thought of coming to Australia. They see all these beautiful things, they might go back and then come back again for a proper visit.
Those are just some examples out of Australia about how to kind of promote wedding tourism, I suppose. It's a very photogenic country, so it makes sense. For us, I do think that there are some natural spots that would seem to lend themselves well to photos. At least we're seeing local couples kind of go to a few recurring spots. There's the rice fields in Sekinchan. And I suppose there's a fake French chateau already for you, if that is your flavour. There are a couple of spots. We have lovely beaches. I can see this making sense. It's just nice to hear from the tourism ministry, frankly.
Yeah, and I think that's why we decided to go with this story, because for the first time he's speaking, this is also a very good idea, I think, because they are hopping onto a trend that's kind of developing. And it's nice to see that. Well, the first idea is a good one.
It's becoming a bit of a running joke, isn't it? Who is our tourism minister? So here you go, an idea. I also have been binge watching Shark Tank recently. I know right. that this seems a little bit off tangent, but one of the sharks, Kevin O'Leary, talks constantly about being in the wedding industry. Like he has this platform called the Something Wonderful platform, which is supposed to be a one-stop shop of sorts, I suppose, for people who are planning weddings. And the reason why he's so interested and invested in it is because people kind of go crazy when they're planning weddings. Suddenly, you know, the idea of having 1,000 extra cupcakes as wedding gifts seemed like a great idea. So I can see how we want to capture that kind of market, that kind of budget, especially because we are targeting people who see destination weddings as no big deal, or not no big deal, but who see it as a possibility.
You know, I personally cannot relate because it seems like such a extravagant thing, but I can also understand why people would have this because it is a once in a lifetime thing.
Well, that's what the wedding industrial complex is going to tell you, that it is once in a lifetime, make it special.
For now.
Yeah, so I'm glad that we're hopping on that bandwagon. talk to us, do you think that this is a good idea from our tourism ministry, this notion that we can become a country for destination weddings, that we can get that market for tourists? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. If you had a destination wedding, tell Kelvin why he's wrong, I suppose. That's also one way to go about it. We'll be right back after this. We're in the Christmas mood, so here's Frank Sinatra with Let It Snow, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 5:18 in the evening. You are listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And earlier we were talking about how egg cartels may or may not be driving up the prices of eggs in our country. And Tan Hwai Keith has weighed in to say, adding an egg to my noodle soup is an additional 2 ringgit at my nearby food court. They're making a hefty profit as it is. So,
you know, I've heard of trends where people bring their own eggs to the shop for them to fry or to add in with their food.
Are people doing that?
I've heard. I think it's especially more common in Penang.
Huh.
Yeah.
That just seems like more trouble than it's worth to like tote out an egg and hope it doesn't crack.
I don't think it's so bad. You know?
I just wonder how many disasters there have been in pockets.
I don't think
bags.
People would carry eggs in their pockets. It's just like a water bottle. You would bring it in a bag, right?
I suppose. I don't know how we've gone down this tangent, but thank you for that, Kelvin. Let us know. We are also talking about an idea that's come from our Deputy Tourism Minister, pushing Malaysia as a wedding destination for tourists and how we're going to kind of try and get on board that market. Jimmy says, well, at least an idea is better than no idea, I guess. And to that, yes, we absolutely agree.
That's not always. Bad ideas are worse than having no ideas.
In this case, though, not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea.
Not stellar, not amazing, but not bad. Let us know what you think about our push for Malaysia to become a tourism destination for weddings in particular. Any places you want to suggest? Do you think this is a good idea? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, our next story poses this question. Would you like to work 4 days a week but get paid for five?
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.
So it sounds too good to be true, but companies around the world that have cut their work week have found that it leads to high productivity, more motivated staff, and less burnout. For example, in New Zealand, insurance company Perpetual Guardian reported a fall in stress and a jump in staff engagement after it tested a 32-hour week earlier this year.
And even in Japan, the government is encouraging companies to allow Monday mornings off, although other schemes in, you know, that rather workaholic country to persuade employees to take it easy have had little effect.
Britain's Trades Union Congress, the TUC, is pushing for the whole country to move to a four-day week by the end of the century, a drive supported by the opposition Labour Party. The TUC argues that a shorter week is a way for workers to share in the wealth generated by new technologies like machine learning and robotics, just as they want the right to the weekend off during the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, we've been working the five-day week for a very long time, and TUC economic head Kate Bell said it will reduce the stress of juggling work and family life and could improve gender equality. Companies that have already tried it say it's better for productivity and staff well-being. A recent survey of 3,000 employees in 8 countries, including the US, Britain and Germany, found that nearly half thought they could easily finish their tasks in 5 hours a day if they had no interruptions, but many are exceeding 40 hours a week anyway, with the United States leading the way, with 49% saying they work overtime. This report from the BBC examines the rationale of the four-day work week.
We've observed that lots of people wait for their whole life for that big moment when they retire. But we've seen that in a few cases that never happens because you get ill or you're older by then, you're not as agile, you don't have the energy to really appreciate that time anymore. Maybe we can just flip that around. Maybe we can just take that time and move it forward and give it back to ourselves and our employees. And so that's when we decided we're going to go for a four-day week.
Jan Schultz-Hofen, founder of Berlin-based project management software company Planio, tested the four-day week on himself after realizing he needed to slow down following a decade of intense work launching the company, whose tools allowed him to track his time in detail.
He went on to say, I didn't get less work done in 4 days than in five, because in 5 days you think you have more time, you take longer, you allow yourself to have more interruptions, you have your coffee a little bit longer, you chat with colleagues. I realized that with 4 days I have to be quick, I have to be focused if I want to have my free Friday.
So Schultz-Hofen and his team discussed various options before settling on everybody working Monday to Thursday. They rejected the idea of flexible hours because it adds administrative complexity and were against the five-day week with shorter hours as it is too easy for overwork to creep back in.
Clients who call on a Friday hear a recorded message explaining why nobody is at the office. And to that, Schultz-Hofen said, we got an unexpected reaction. Most of our clients did not complain. They were just jealous. Frankly, I think a lot of us are.
Yeah. Same here.
It's one of those conversations that come up time and time again. People have written books about this as well, about how to have that four-day work week. And I do agree entirely with that point that the more time you have, the more your task expands to fit that time. I think it's called Parkinson's Law. It's that adage that work expands to fill the time available for its completion. So if you give yourself 4 days, of course, this doesn't work if you're being irrational, but I think 1 day less. And if you assume that, okay, fine, I can't take as many breaks, I can't kind of faff about with colleagues, I can't take those, you know, smoke breaks or coffee breaks as often as I would like, I do think 4 days is perfectly plausible.
Though I don't think it might work in all industries, right? I think, for example, I'd like to... But then again, you know, I'm thinking about the banking industry, but then if everyone does do the four-day work week, why would banks in general have to run 5 days or 6 or 7 days a week?
It also comes down to a changing of expectation. I think some companies, some industries, some countries have that expectation of the more you work, the more my money's worth, you know, that I'm getting out of you, my employee. But what people are finding, what studies are finding increasingly, is that productivity doesn't necessarily change. And so I think that there is that value. It's about assigning value to your output more than the hours that you've spent at an office. Because right now, there is still sometimes that badge of pride to say, well, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, I'm just so busy. My company keeps me so busy. And having to make that shift will be an interesting one, but we all have to do it. I think you're right. It should be a collective decision. Right now, it's happening on a company by company basis, a country by country basis. And that makes it hard to coordinate. And in Malaysia, for example, where you have different states working different days and having different weekends, I think what that 4 days looked like would be different as well.
I think there's a lot of interest to the government to try to at least encourage or implement this, because right now, even Mahathir is talking about in the Industrial Revolution 4.0, maybe that extra 1 day could be used to go for all sorts of training, whether it be coding or whether it be like other sorts of entrepreneurial skills that they can gain.
Or voluntary work also. I think more people would like time for that. Let us know, would this work in Malaysia? Would you like to see this happen? And if it did, what would you be doing with that one extra day that you have? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now we've got some music, The Jam with In The City, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.